Corey Moore from the Chicago Tribune is with us. Good evening, Corey.
Hey, John, how are you?
I am just fine. So glad that you're on. Before we get to anything else, did you watch the Super Bowl yesterday? You must have.
I did. Although I have to say, we were at our neighbor's house, and there were a bunch of kids running around and a bunch of food. So I wasn't as glued to the TV as I should have been. But I did see that commercial that you just mentioned.
Really?
Yes.
No kidding. I loved it.
Me too.
It was released a couple of, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago online. And I had played it on the air here a couple of times, and I said, man, I'm telling you, I just love that commercial. And then it turned out to be the number one rated commercial in the Super Bowl, which is okay, cool.
I wonder, because by that point in the game, I was like, are we going to see a Clydesdale commercial?
Like
I said, I was kind of in and out, but of watching commercials, but I was like, where are the Clydesdales? I thought this was going to be a big Clydesdale thing. So
the
I was
only
happy
one.
To see it come up. Yeah. Yes.
I think it's the only one.
Yeah. And I think it was in like the third quarter. I mean, it was late. It was after halftime.
Yeah, it was. I'm trying to, the USA Today ad meter, that's what I've been trying to tell you is the barometer for these things. And, well, the thing about watching the Super Bowl, so many things have been said about the Super Bowl today. But one of the things that always is part of that experience is checking out these commercials that various advertisers have spent so much money on. I just want to throw this in here. You saw that commercial. The Clydesdale horse is real. The bald eagle is real. It's a trained eagle named Lincoln, provided by the American Eagle Foundation. Scenes were filmed with live animals under supervision. Some moments, especially the dramatic Pegasus moment where the eagle spreads its wings while riding the horse, were digitally enhanced using GCI and composting, so I guess that's what they call it. It is not an AI-generated commercial. It uses real animals, traditional filming and visual effects, similar to how major movies are made. Oof.
Huh.
I thought it was great. And then, you know, Budweiser doesn't even come on the screen until like the very last shot, just about. You know, it's...
That's a good point. I learned in journalism school that the key to a good commercial is remembering. If you remember the commercial and you remember what it was for, then it's a successful commercial. And so, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, do people now associate the Clydesdale and the Dalmatian so much with Budweiser that, you know, all they have to do is stick it in at the end, and you're like, yeah, that's what I know. Like, that sounds like a pretty successful commercial.
I think you're right. I think it's been so many years, and they've put so many Clydesdale commercials on for various times of the year, you know, Christmas and things like that, the Super Bowl, that when you see it now, you figure, well, that's what it's got to be. At any rate, I wanted to get that in because I just loved it so much. That's all. And as I said, 79.5 million people watched the Super Bowl. So I guess a lot of people who were listening probably recognized it. That Turning Point alternative halftime show apparently had 5 million people. Oh, and the Puppy Bowl had 12.5 million. I don't want to leave the puppies out of it. John, you're not taking in the Puppy Bowl? Oh, far be it from me. More with Corey Moore when we come back on 720 WGN. John Landick along with... that whole thing about Bad Bunny, without making other comments right now, maybe later, but I'm thinking, wait a minute, wasn't there some sort of old instrumental dance or something along that line called the Bunny Hop? And I looked it up, and yeah, that's it. Bum, bum, bum. anything to lighten the mood. What can I say?
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, I'm going to say one thing about the Bad Bunny halftime show. So I start watching it, and initially I'm not really getting into it at all. I don't like it. But then as it went on and on and on, I'm like getting into it more and more and more and more because the choreography was unbelievable. The sets pieces, the way he moved through these various locations that were obviously part of his heritage. And then, I mean, which really impressed me. And then today I heard people in, you know, giving the English translation to what he was saying. And, you know, I would take the time and do that, by the way, if you are so inclined, because it's really impressive. Okay, thank you, Jen, for your uncalled for opinion. So, Corey, you know, writes for the Chicago Tribune. And by the way, oh, yes, there's that other thing going on now. That would be the Olympics. Boy, is it. NBC was just loaded yesterday. I mean, they've got the Olympics going on, and then they have to make room for the Super Bowl, and then they go back to the Olympics. I don't know if I ever recall one network. Well, the timing has to be right. I mean, both events have to fall on the same day, and it has to be on the same network. At any rate.
True.
You have a great article.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
You have a great article.
I read online, just one more thing about Olympics. I read online that there were several private planes that were flying directly from, you know, the Super Bowl festivities to Italy because a bunch of the people who are covering the Super Bowl now have to be covering the Olympics. And I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, really. Well, it occurred to me, too. Think about the camera people, the directors, the technical challenge of not only doing the Super Bowl, but then going and doing a multi-location live broadcast of the Winter Olympics. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
Totally.
So,
yeah, I'm impressed by the logistics of all that, too.
Yeah. We don't have to do anything that you wrote if you don't want to. If there's something else you wanted to say, fire away at any time. You know that.
No. Just, when is this winter going to end?
Oh, God. Please.
So we might as well have Olympics. We might as well have fun things to watch on TV.
No, you're right. I asked myself.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's like enough of this already. I've had plenty. Yes. Take it somewhere else now. But I think it's supposed to get warmer. I think it's supposed to get into the 40s in a couple of days. So
that's true. That's going to feel balmy.
It's going to. Yeah, I'm going to have my shorts on and go for a picnic. So. Corey writes for the Tribune, has a great article about Chicago people who have been in Olympic Games, which I found very interesting, some of whom I had heard of, some of whom I hadn't. You give their name and where they're from. For instance, this first one here is Kevin Bickner, who's from Wakanda, and this is ski jumping. And this is relatively recent, his Olympic experience. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, he's participating in this Winter Olympics as well.
Right.
You might not think ski jumpers could be from, you know, the flatland that is the Chicago metro area, but Norgy Ski Club up in Fox River Grove has been holding competitions, for a really long time. I think it's almost a century. And so he is a product of that ski club. And this is actually, let's see, he went in 2018, and then I think he finished 43rd in the 2022 Olympics. So not as high up as I'm sure he would have liked. But in 2018, he and two others from the same ski club, they were actually inducted into the American Ski Jumping Hall of Fame because they competed and I don't think they medaled, but they finished pretty high in standings for Americans, because this is one of the sports. The thing I love about the Winter Olympics is how little I know about most of the sports and most of the people who are competing. Yeah. And, you know, I was talking with my son about this the other day. He's like, Mom, how come the United States isn't good in this? And I'm like, kiddo, do you realize there are countries, I mean, I just complain about our winter. There are countries that, I mean, this is their favorite time of year because they can have all of these competitions in the snow and the cold. And so things like biathlon and ski jumping and, you know, skeleton, it's really foreign to me, but it's just so fun to watch because it is so different. And there are people who this is their sport and this is, you know, their time of year. So for Kevin Bickner, this is it. So we'll see how he finishes at the Olympics. Also, I'm kind of fascinated by the idea of these people who can compete year after year after year in the Olympics. This is his third, and I don't think he's announced whether he would compete again or not. But we were watching, what was it? It was the downhill skiing, and I believe there was a man who was like 37 years old, and it's like his fifth Olympics. And so just to see the longevity of some of these athletes is fascinating.
Yeah, because, you know, they don't hold these Olympics every year. I mean, so there's there's periods of time in between these Olympics. So if you say somebody participated in four or five Olympic Games, we're talking, I would think, well over a decade of time from
absolutely,
you know, and that's very impressive to say the least. And also, tell your son that don't worry about the individual event if you don't think the United States is any good in it. Just wait for the medal count. The medal count.
Oh, yeah.
The medal count can takes in everything, and the last time I looked, which was like this morning, although things can change, the United States was leading in the medal count, which includes obviously every medal in the Olympics, so there's hope for
us. That's good to know. Oh. Yeah, I know, what was it, team skating, the United States dominated that.
There you go.
Maybe we've just been watching the wrong sports.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Plus, you know, we'll get our medals. Don't worry. We always do.
Yes.
But I don't think we should launch into any more. I mean, we have Bonnie Blair and Shani Davis and Asia Evans and Billy Fisk and a bunch more that Corey has written about, which we're going to get to. By the way, have you heard that these medals are breaking? I'm serious.
I saw that.
Did you see this?
I totally saw it. I saw, who is it, Breezy Johnson? Yeah. She was jumping up in the air excited, and the medal just flew
broke
off of the ribbon.
And apparently it's not just an isolated incident. The Olympic medals apparently can break easily. So I heard that there were officials from the Olympics going, we are addressing this problem with all of our possible efforts, and hopefully it will be resolved. But I'm like, I don't ever recall news of Olympic medals breaking when somebody, obviously they're going to jump up and down because, you know, they're excited. They won. And
Bring up a good point, John, because, I mean, gold and silver prices are so high right now.
Right,
I'm wondering about the breakdown, like how much gold is actually in a gold medal and how does that compare with previous medals? Like, that's the nerdy stuff that I love.
Well, we'll do more nerdy stuff with Corey when we come back, but right now it's the bottom of the hour and time to get into the WGN newsroom. 24 inches in the Sunday paper. Sounds like a lot. 7:36, John Landegger at 7:20 WGN, talking to Corey Moore from the Chicago Tribune. She's written a great article about local Winter Olympians of games past and reacquainted me with some names that I hadn't thought about in a while, but of course should. When it comes to speed skating, from Champaign, Illinois, that'd be Bonnie Blair. I mean, man, who doesn't remember Bonnie Blair? Come on, right? One of the most decorated U.S. women in Winter Olympic history, isn't that right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think, what does she have, 5 gold and 1 bronze medal in speed skating? Yeah. I grew up watching her and immediately wanted to get into speed skating for 2 minutes, you know, before it changed my mind. But Illinois seems to be a hub for speed skating, and I believe today Bonnie Blair and her husband are running a facility up in Milwaukee that I think hosted was it the national championships, I think, for speed skating a month or so ago. So she's still very involved in the sport.
Have you ever known anyone who, as a youngster, you know, had Olympic hopes and started training for that event? I'm not talking specifically about the Winter Olympics, but Summer Olympics, because it is, you're giving up your entire life to do this. You know what I mean? Your adolescent years or whatever.
Right.
My daughter had a friend who was training to be a gymnast. And, you know, we're talking about, I don't know how early the practice sessions would start in the morning, but, you know, as a parent, you're taking your kid back and forth. And it's just really an unbelievable amount of dedication as far as time and obviously the physical effort that it takes to do it, but it's, you really got to want to do it. So I would think, who cares about whether or not you make, you know, you get a medal, so to speak. I think if you make it on the Olympic team and you actually get to the Olympics in whatever capacity, you really have made, you know, you're coming out of that a winner no matter what.
I completely agree.
It is something else. All right. Let's get to Shani Davis, who is from Chicago. This goes back to 2006, the first black athlete to win an individual gold medal at the Winter Games? Really?
I know. It's so sad that it took that long, right? 2006.
Wow.
But yeah, oh gosh, this is one I absolutely remember watching. And I live in Evanston. He used to train in Evanston. In fact, our old ice skating rink here used to have pictures of him.
No kidding.
Plaques of him. Yeah. It was a really, really big deal that he was here, that he was working out here and practicing here. And 2006 was huge for Shani Davis. And again, you know, we're talking about longevity with some of these athletes. He competed in four Olympics, and I think his last was in Korea. And I think after that, he was helping one of the Asian teams with their speed skating. He was serving as a coach. But he's kind of famously quiet, and, you know, he's not all over social media. So
right.
I'm honestly not sure what he's up to these days. But
right.
Yeah, the Tribune covered him like crazy because he was so impressive and unprecedented for the sport of speed skating.
You know, I've thought over the years, you know, if I was going to go after a Winter Olympic event, what would I be interested in? And yeah. I always get back to the bobsled or the luge, one way or the other, because you know what? I went sledding as a kid down a hill. So, you know, I'm obviously not going to do that, but it's like, wow. How cool is that? Whenever that comes on, whenever the luge or the, you know, single bobsled or the multi-person bobsled comes on, I think that's really amazing. I mean, it's just one of those events that, for me anyway, I don't know. I think they're all great events, but the luge and the bobsled. And then there was the, 19, the Jamaican bobsled team. I'm trying to remember what year that was.
Was that 1988?
Something around there. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I watched Cool Runnings growing up.
Cool Runnings. That's it.
Jamaican bobsled team. I think John Candy was in that one too.
Yeah. I think he played. Yes, he does. Yeah. He does. I was glancing at it the other day. Cool Runnings. That's right. The Jamaican bobsled team. Man. Well, anyway, there's the reason I'm talking about bobsled is the next person in your article here is Asia. Do I got that right? A.J.A. Evans?
Yeah, Asia. Mm-hmm.
From Asia Chicago.
Evans. And, you know, this is interesting. A lot of track and field athletes, they're able to transition to bobsled, especially, you know, when it comes to pushing.
Right.
I don't know what the different positions, you mentioned the multi-person bobsled, what they're called, but they tend to be the ones who push very quickly and can hop on it. And that's exactly Asia Evans was a big time all American in shot put. at the University of Illinois, and she transitioned to bobsled. And so she was part of a two-woman bobsled team in 2014, and she won a bronze medal. And she comes from an amazing family of athletes. So sometimes I feel like with a lot of these athletes, it's just in their genes. Like, they are going to become amazing performers no matter what they do. Her brother, Fred, was in the NFL for 8 seasons. Her cousin was Gary Matthews Jr., who was in Major League Baseball for 12 years, including a short time with the Cubs. And her uncle, Gary Matthews, was an all-star in Major League Baseball.
Absolutely.
And he was with the Cubs for 4 seasons in the 1980s. So, a lot of family history here of great athletes.
You know, I have a quote from her in your article, the first time Evans took a run down the bobsled track, a sensation she likened to being stuffed into a garbage can and pushed off a cliff, which I thought, that's you know what? That's pretty graphic, because none of us, I believe, have ever really been stuffed into a garbage can, let alone being thrown off a cliff.
But
that's very descriptive and right on. Wow. And as long as we're at the bobsled, you've got another Chicagoan who is actually from Chicago, Billy Fisk. This goes way back into 1911. Whoa.
Yeah.
And his family go ahead.
Yeah. He was born here in 1911, but what I find is really interesting about Olympics, especially in like the 1920s, 1924 was the first Winter Olympics, and he participated in bobsled. But the reason he was able to do that is because he was already over in Europe studying. I think that was a time where, you know, the funding just to get overseas to an Olympics game was prohibitive for most people. But in his case, I believe he was studying at Oxford or somewhere like that. So it was a hop, skip, and a jump. And so he was 16 years old at the time, and he ended up becoming the driver for a 5-man bobsled team for the United States in Switzerland, and that team won gold. So, a little bit of a different situation. I remember the same thing. The first American woman who won a gold medal, Margaret Abbott, competed in golf, and her story was very similar. She and her mom had been traveling overseas, and they saw there was a golf tournament and didn't, you know, recognize it was for the Olympics per se, but she participated and won. And the funny part about that is her mom participated with her and ended up finishing in the top 10. So it was just a different time for this competition. But Billy Fisk is really interesting because he went on to become, he joined the Royal Air Force, not the American Air Force, the Royal Air Force, and ended up dying during the Battle of Britain at just 29 years old. So fascinating, but short life for Billy Fisk.
John Landecker with Corey Moore from the Tribune here at 720 WGN.